was your experience like when you first started chanting?
When I first started chanting, I was a young man, like a teenager, and I ran into a Buddhist chant. Om Mani Padme Hum. Mm-hmm. It's the Om Mani Padme Hum. And I just try and do that. That was the first chant I ran into. And it impressed me. And later on, when I began to actually realize a few years later that Om is the actual sound Om and the silence behind it, the oneness, is everything. I thought, that's so incredible. Like as a mental concept. It just went in as a nerve and started, as a seed started growing. Like, and over the years it just kept, anytime I got closer to it kept growing. And I'd say, I grew more, oh well. I undid more. But then I ran across Swami Bhaktivedanta, who started the Hare Krishnas. When he first came over, he was 70. He just took a boat over, got off the boat without any money, started chanting in a park, and the whole Hare Krishna movement around the world built up in the next 12 years.
Those were the days.
Yeah, that's what could happen. Well, no, it still could happen. It's just a question of being, and being simple enough, everyone can relate to simplicity. Any kid can do this.
I'm like, wonderful. When do I close the sound off and bring my lips together?
This is all your training. So what you do is you play with your training. No, but this is why you use the name of God. You play with your training, because you know what this is. You try this, you try this, you try it with sound, you try it with anything, but you just keep using the name of God there, and it keeps it centered and brings it back around until it becomes more emotional and personal, and then you're laughing at that, seemingly, on a spiritual level, that anal retentive measuring you.
Well, yeah, but and also in the fight of, to me, what is God?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, you know, you,
that's the same thing as what is love. As soon as it's not what you think it is.
Exactly.
So the thinking is the disease. The chanting is a tool that fights the disease. Because when you're into it and chanting, at times you're not thinking. You know, like, it stops it for a moment, or it weakens it.
And then you jump back into your
brain,
right?
But then it comes back. But that's the process. That's the beginning of developing the muscles to trust the silence. So, like, really, there's no music. It's not sounds and notes that make music. It's the pauses of silence between the notes that capture everyone's feelings. It's what's not said and what's not there. It's the restraint that makes the emotions touch someone. You know, it's just in being refined and trained in music and in sound, you're used to using this as a tool that can affect that without often even knowing what you're doing.
The silence makes room for the noise, though.
Well, the noise are just the tombstones to the soul. It's the silence where the soul is, in the music. But music is there to be listened to and enjoyed. And many chants are put out there and taught, put out like music. Oh, just enjoy it. Well, if it's using a name of God, it's still doing a healing thing. But if you're chanting it and being it rather than enjoying it, it's not about liking or disliking. It's realizing it's pure. It's like we're taking a psychic bath. Like, it's like we created a silence that's just clearing our vibrations or refining it immediately now. Just knowing that that can be so changes everything. You know, but it does bring up, then we back up, so, well, to me, this doesn't mean this is, our mind is trying to build our importance around what it means to us. It's not supposed to mean anything. But if it feels good, it's addictive. And if you recognize where the clarity or where the feeling is coming from its source, rather than from outer symptoms, you begin to tread into the sacred space. And build up your emotions around it, and you'll find it fixes confidence, it heals other things that you couldn't consciously heal. You know, in an unmeasurable way. Like these guys, they would appear in different bodies at different times. They'd be sitting down talking to a bunch of people like this. Somebody 200 miles away is falling down in a plane crash, and his body appears beside them in the plane as he's going down, and goes down and crashes with the guy, holds on until somebody's just about there to find them, then he goes. You know, like another time he was sitting down, the Sai Baba, he was sitting down, and he was sitting down there, he was just doing something, there's a big fire beside him, Oh no, it was the fire. Oh, where's the front of him? All of a sudden, he just puts his hand right in the fire, and a hand gets burnt. He said, "Why on earth?" Everyone's saying, all his devotees saying, "Why on earth did you do that? Why would you hurt yourself like that?" He said, "I didn't hurt myself. I saved a baby." About 30 miles away, this lady who was with a smith who's using a fire to fire up things, she was sitting there with her husband, and she dropped the baby into the fire, and he went and grabbed the baby out of the fire. Saved the baby's life. How clear do you be to know that? On that God plane, it's not you. Things happen that are just too incredible to measure.
What would happen if so many people in the world were brought to this place and realizations like this? Wouldn't the world like have a better chance of being healed?
Well, we're really all there. We can't not be there. We're just filling up our sensation, indulging it so much that we convince ourselves that that's not there and this is what's more real. And we're imposing our own sensation. It's our own vulgarity. And so, like you meet somebody who's just obsessed on sex and all they're talking about is that, it's almost vulgar and it goes too far. Well, we're doing that with our minds and our egos, because our ego, the I, is just a thought that wants control, and we're making relevance. This is meaning, this is relevant to this, this is relevant to that. You know, and you make this whole network of what's meaningful and relevant to each other with no room for irrelevancy. This silence is irrelevant. It's funny, like that's the humor of God, you know. But when you start feeling it, and you get your feelings, you start perceiving from a different dimension, and you start seeing the seeds of complexes in your life, and in people's lives. It's not something you can do. It opens like that, and if you fight it, you get unhappy, and difficult things happen until you start opening. No, but it's why they say that. When you hear, you have to have a guru in that, we think, oh, geez, you got to follow a guru. Who's to say? We can figure it out for ourselves. But the point really is, you don't know that's there until you run across someone that confirms or affirms that it's there. One can get there, but it's very unlikely, because we have our sense of reality in this thought, and this thought, and this action, family, and so many situations. You know, like, you're a perfect example. You're right there. You got life just happening. Every thought, every worry in the world's right there. You know, every anticipation, so all your thoughts, to get moments of peace in that, that's incredible. You know, to take the moment out and even just come, that's fantastic. You know, it's...
Life will happen on its own.
Yeah. It does. In fact, that's it. Even being a mother, the real issue of motherhood is not that I'm doing it. Nobody can do their kid. It's crazy. It's impossible. No. It's just, the kid comes, all of a sudden, it's going to die if you don't. It gets done. You know, like, it's a texture, but that's still a sensational texture. And because it is, from this point of silence, when you get to the silence, you see things beyond time. Almost eternally, or you sense them, not see them. And even those things of life seem to be an illusion, because they change. They're just textures of sensation and karma and complexes of who we are running into each other. You know, right now you're two souls in one body. That's so incredible. You know, and then when the baby's born, you get this moment, you hold the baby, and you see you holding the baby's holding you, you see your mother holding you, her mother holding her, and you get this moment where you see eternity right there. And it moves so fast, you just get it for a second, and then you're dancing, and you're spinning to keep up with everything. But everyone gets that moment. It just sits there. But someone who hasn't had a child, it's not the same thing. You know, like, until you see that vulnerable, because you feel it so vulnerable, so hopeless. I mean, bringing up a kid is 90% grossness for 10% glory if you're measuring it, if that. No? But at the same time, it's so alive, and there's so much other things in the silence, in the fulfillment that comes, because you become more than you would ever be. So it's things that we have to play out our textures and our karma in life. You know, it's a very different thing being a woman and being able to have life than being a man and having an outer relationship to it, which is why guys look stupid. They don't get that, they don't have that textural experience of that. It usually comes through sorrow, through being alone, through not fitting in. through feeling this is you're like my mother and you have to fit in and you're trying to belong, and then you're just acting like another big kid, and this is who needs another kid, right? So like, but that's the tech, that difference is what makes the magic, that makes kids here. That's part of the illusion or a texture of life. That's different than the silence. But you can get to your silence without detaching from life, being totally active involved. You just have to let go of control. Like you can be controlling and doing everything in your life, but realizing, who's doing me? What's the purpose of this? So the chanting's undoing things that bring us, it's like peeling an onion, it's taking peels off. And I didn't know that that was there. Like the first time I went into this room in India, I was only in there about 11 or 12 days or something. And I came out, I just knew I was a little cleaner than I was before, and I didn't know how to measure it or anything. I just knew I had to go further. Because it fixed something from my older times when I had been doing drugs or doing other things and messing up my life as a teenager. It was undoing some of that stuff. And I just knew that way was dead. And this was a chance to work something, which is why I had ended up going to India and not fitting in anywhere else anywhere. Anyway, it was like undoing and trying to restore innocence. But it's not a our will can make the conscious effort because we sense it, but it's not something we know. And as soon as we think we know it, we're going to be made a fool of. You can take care of all the things in your life and still keep the silence there once it's there. You don't have to be sitting in a cave to do it. The value of these rooms was that by running into silence, you run into the limits of your mind. The minute you get alone, your mind tells you every reason in the world why you have to get out of there. To see someone, I've got to do this, I've got to... Every thought comes up. And you chant and you hold on because you're trying... But it's just so simple. But that simplicity is frustrating because we're so busy complicating our life because it's meaningful. You know, like just even in music, in the 50s music, there were such simple patterns. You could hear the music and it's easy to fall in love with those old songs. Now it's those were all owned as copyrights. So music now has to have much more complicated, much more thick textures and bypass it to be copyrightable. So that someone doesn't own it. So we don't have much peace in music anymore. No, it's just part of a process of extension. But this is the age of Kali, the age of argument and quarrel, where everyone's attached to how separate they are, and fighting and arguing, oh yeah, you know. Like,
well, and Robin, I think that's because of our culture and what they're, how we're living with media and everything. In our culture, because it's so self-centered and egotistical and all these things, and it's all about what I feel and what
TV
I
TV and watch
where
it, yeah.
In the East, they're thinking, they're not thinking of those
things. No. Now it's not true.
Now
it's all TV everywhere.
At the time when you went, you had to go there to find what you were looking for.
Yeah, well, I didn't really, but it happened that way.
But a lot of your generation did that.
Yeah.
And they went in search of
and
brought back. And
yeah, different types of experiences. So it's not about what I've gone. It's like realizing that there's a puzzle in yourself. Mm-hmm. And that the mind is the battlefield. And it's the very thing that stops us from being able to love and just be unconditionally open. Mm-hmm. Now, if we see the battle, you see the value of the chanting. Nothing else comes close to it. So one of the beautiful things of they say it's the even though it's the age of darkness, it's the most, of all the four ages, this is the easiest age to become enlightened in. Because only by chanting, you can get there. And in other ages, it takes years of rituals, years of different processes. Whereas in the Kali Yuga, it's just, you fight your mind, by chanting you can get there. So it's the darkest time, but that's also... But the darkness is not...
Is it the Kali?
Pardon?
Did you say the Kali, Robin?
Yeah, Kali Yoga. What's Kali that? Age. It's the age of darkness.
Okay.
It started about 5,000 years ago. And it goes for something like 78,000 years.
70?
8,000 years
78?
Or more.
78?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't remember if it's 78 or 100 and some 7,000, but it's a long time.
So if we get enlightened, we don't have to deal with those other few 100,000 years.
So they say Krishna comes in and is born just at the end of the last age as the beginning of the new age. So that was 5,000 years ago. So all the old Vedic teachings and all the old Indian teachings come from that time. And even in China, the old Chinese teachings at the source of the I Ching and the source of these, it goes back to that same time, about 3,000 a bit BC. Even when you go back to the old Hebrew, when did the world begin? And you go back to those, it's going back to that same time. Beyond which we don't have any conscious recollection. It doesn't mean you can't get beyond it. But you can't. Your feelings can. But it's not sympathy feelings, it's just an aliveness and a sense of clarity. It's like a burning flame that we all are. It's like there's no such thing as separate soul. Separate soul is still attached to our ego and our sense of separative life. This is my life, what am I doing with it? Like, it's valid when we're in here. Like, we have to work through it. It's God-given, we got to work with our pinch angels. But there'll always be missing things and lost battles until you get to your silence. You can't expect anybody to be a saint or perfect. It's something that happens internally as you take off the veils. If you sense it, no. We did. It was a very nice chat because we just went in. Everyone went in with their honesty, just their own awkwardness, their own struggles. But by the time we got to our silence, it was really there. No, it wasn't. It wasn't just there. It was just really. It really was. We cleaned something. We reached. It worked through something. So this is the puzzle, but. To be able to do that, like we do it in a moment. Okay, well, this is a moment in a month. Wow. If the great devotees or people who really been there, if they slip off for a minute, they're almost ready to cry and be suicidal. Because how could I let go, God? How could I come in and cut myself off from this when I know better? It's different levels of emotional intensity in what's called bhava or scope. And it's totally subjective, but it's more than that. Like when we get there, it removes barriers. So when I'm talking, I'm not talking at anyone. I'm talking to undo, just in the way that I try and undo it for myself. I still fight with it. I got grandkids. I got a son. I got headaches. I got rent to pay. Like there's stuff, but that's a different thing. No, so I've got it now where I chant 3 hours in the morning and a couple of, at least an hour or hour and a half before I go to bed. Well, sometimes if I'm tired, I might only get half an hour in. But usually I think it's 15 minutes and an hour has gone by. But I trust it more. Like, it takes time to trust that it's so.
You're in your own black room.
Yeah, well, when you close your eyes, is it dark or is it light?
In my house?
No, when you close your eyes. Yeah, but just closing your eyes, it's our sensation that is the darkness. It's our sense perceptions and our thoughts that is the darkness. But behind the thoughts, it's just burning clear light. But behind the thoughts comes from down in here. You know, and we indulge it up to here. And then we make it more real so it's really cutting off. Our centering.